Cars. I remember watching that movie several years after it came out with my 5, 6, 7-year-old, I'm not sure, grandson, who's 16 today. We could, not his birthday, but you know, I can imagine us watching that movie right now, and it would just flashback, same time. It's great points. Thanks, Cindy. Integrity. Yeah, we're going to talk about that kind of in a roundabout way today. It's great to have everyone here. And for you who are still online watching out there somewhere, we're glad to have you as well. Some of you are watching this in the morning and some are watching it tomorrow. You know, that happens too. So it's okay. We're glad you're here, virtually or otherwise. Today, we're going through the book of Genesis still. Last week, we started our time about Joseph. And man, those Joseph and his brothers had some trouble. And thank you, Jeremy, for showing us that sometimes we have similar trouble with envy and with jealousy. And today, though, we're going to move ahead in that story. We're going to still be in Joseph next week and maybe the next week. And, you know, there's a lot about Joseph. So we're going to talk today, though, about forgiveness and reconciliation. Forgiveness and reconciliation. Two things that have a lot in common, but they're not the same. And this story is full of both. And so we're going to talk about for a minute this story, the story of Joseph and his brothers, and kind of run through the story. I'm going to skip some parts, and so if you're worried that I'm skipping your favorite part, maybe we'll get to that next week. So don't get shook up. We might not cover every point this week, and we're going to kind of run through to get to some points about these two ideas, forgiveness and reconciliation. I want to tell first a story that came to my mind about the days when I was a football coach. And the point about this story is that we have been hurt by others. And if you have been hurt by others, see, even the youngest in the room knows what I'm talking about. We've been hurt by others. And we have hurt others. Right? That's both things. And, you know, we've been damaged and wounded. Our health has been, our reputation, our finances. We've been betrayed. We've been neglected. We've been abused. We've been hurt by others, and we've hurt others. We've been part of it. And so what we want to ask, what does the story of Joseph say about that? That very common human experience of being hurt or hurting others. Well, in football, it would happen in practice. This is the way it went down. There would be, we'd be practicing, and you know, we're scuffling and stuff because it's football. We're not playing golf. We're playing football. There's some physical contact going on. And every once in a while, some people will say some, call each other some names. I know that might shock you, but yeah. That happens there in football practice. And then every once in a while, there's what happens is called a cheap shot. Y'all know what a cheap shot is, if you can imagine that? Somebody whacks somebody else when they're not looking, when they're not supposed to be whacking each other. Now, sometimes you are whacking each other in football, and it's okay. You expect it, right? But sometimes there's the thing called the cheap shot, and somebody comes up and, bam, whacks you in the side of the head, and you're not looking. Or at worst, they'll hit you in the legs and maybe injure you. And this is bad. And often what happens in practice, because there's no referees and stuff, what will happen in practice after a cheap shot, y'all want to know what happens? A fight. A fight happens. And you know, a fight is not good because fighting among teammates, fighting, okay, now you're all of a sudden see Joseph and his brothers. Fighting among teammates destroys team chemistry. And you know, we're not talking about like chemistry. We're talking about this bond that teammates have. When you're good, when your team is going to be good, you're going to have good team chemistry. And a fight doesn't help that. So what we would do, we'd step in as quickly as possible, stop the fight as coaches, and then we'd say, you know, okay, you guys, stop that, blah. And then we'd make them do this little thing. We'd make the two fighters, and try and imagine a couple of guys that are 6'5", 300 pounds, and we would make them skip around the practice field holding hands. And that's funny. And all the guys laughed at them, and they hated it, you know. But they knew it was going to happen. And it was a symbol, you know, that we're not going to keep up this fight up. You guys are not enemies. You're teammates. And so they had to skip around the practice field holding hands. Now, then sometimes there had to be some other conversations after that, you know, to really break down what had happened and is there really some damage in the relationships here. But you understand how that might, you know, at least throw a little bit of water on the fire, because team chemistry is important. And so we're going to race through this story of Joseph and his brothers to get to some points that we'll make in just a minute. So first of all, Joseph and his brothers, and we talked about this last week, they came to a point where they hated each other. I mean, that's the way the Bible puts it. And in just a few verses in the same chapters, boom, 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 rapid fire. They hated him. They hated him. They hated him. And he's their brother. And they hated him so much they wanted to kill him. But instead, they sold him into slavery, which, you know, okay, that's nice. No, they sold him into slavery, and they're thinking, you know, we ought to get something out of this. I mean, that was their logic. We ought to, you know, if we just kill him, we'll get nothing for it. But if we can sell him, we'll at least have some. Terrible. And they told his dad, because dad was kind of part of the problem. He had showed favor to, you know, we're not going into that, though. But they told the dad he was killed by a ferocious animal. You know, what? Well, then he becomes a slave in Egypt, and we're running through this pretty fast, and his life in Egypt was a roller coaster, up and down and up. He was a slave, but then he was the head slave. And you know, if you're a slave, you want to be the head slave. You know, that's what you want to be. And well, more on that later. And then he was falsely accused. And you know, how many of y'all have been falsely accused of something? Man, I mean, his sent him to prison. I didn't get sent to prison. But sometimes it felt just as bad. You know, falsely accused is terrible. And so he goes to prison. And in prison, he's just waiting. He's just there. And life in prison. Can you imagine it? I can't. But he, even in prison, turns out to be kind of the good guy that everybody likes. So in prison, he gets out because he does this dream, you know, interpreting thing, and eventually he rises in the government. He gets out of prison, goes into the government, and he rises to number two in control of all of Egypt. And he was a wise ruler, and he was highly respected. And then comes a famine. And in the Bible, when a famine comes, what that means is a signal, ding, 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 something big is about to happen. If you have a famine or a woman who cannot get pregnant, something big is going to happen next. You know, whatever it is, something big is going to happen. And what happened in this case, the brothers, they were hungry, and they, the ones who sold him into slavery, went down and begged for food because they were hungry. And they didn't recognize him. He recognized them, though. And he puts on this big charade. It's really funny, kind of, if you let yourself get into the funniness of it, even though it was kind of serious. But he goes through this big process, and we'll talk about that some more later. But eventually, he forgives his brothers. He forgives them even before they know he's their brother. But he forgives them, but he tests them. And here's the thing about testing. He didn't just want to forgive them. He wanted his family back. Now, this is important. And I'll come back to this again. He wanted family back. And you can forgive someone who's in your family who's hurt you and not get your family back. Are you with me? You can have a relationship with someone that's broken because one of the two of you hurt the other, and there can be forgiveness that happens and still not get that relationship back. But Joseph wanted the relationship back, so he had to test the brothers. And the tests were because, are you still the evil men you used to be? That's what he was trying to find out. Are you still the evil men you used to be? But eventually, he reveals his true identity. More on that next week. And he kisses all his brothers. This is a moment of forgiveness. He kisses all of his brothers. He reveals himself. This is me. They're scared to death. They're terrified because they think he's going to kill them, which he could. Boom. Because that's what they deserved. But instead, he kisses them. He loves them right off the bat. And eventually, he reveals his true identity. And then, through his influence and his relationship with Pharaoh, he gets them the best land in the country. He takes care of them financially. He takes care of their future financially because he wants the family to get back together. And here's what we're going to get at the end. The brothers, though, did not even trust Joseph's love for them. They didn't trust his grace. And I wonder sometimes, I want you to begin to think about this right now, are we that kind of person who grace and forgiveness is being offered to us, but we don't trust that? We don't, because we know, you know what we know? We don't deserve it. And so maybe, you know, I don't deserve it. And maybe I can't trust the grace that someone else or even God is giving me. And in the end, Joseph reassures them. Now then, we're going to move on to this idea about forgiveness and reconciliation being different. But first of all, something that's going to get in our way is grudges, revenge, and animosity. I want you to think of grudges as this. Something's happened to you, and you're wounded. And the wound would heal, but you keep bothering it. You know, it's like a scab. And holding a grudge, you would heal, but you don't let the wound heal. That's a grudge. Okay, revenge is something where you're going to try and get even with the person. You know, this is what happens on the football field. Somebody whacks me, I'm not looking. Well, the next thing you know, I think the best thing I need to do right now is beat them up. And so, because I want to get revenge. I want to get so-called, I want to get even. And, you know, you're never going to get even. So fights just escalate. That's what happens on the football field. It happens in life. And so revenge feels, it seems like it's going to feel good. Sometimes we daydream about revenge. Have y'all ever had the daydream revenge conversation where, man, I can't wait till I can tell this person this and this and this and this and this and this. And they're going to feel so bad when I tell them that, you know? Stupid. I mean, I've done that so many times, you know. But it's like, this is revenge. You think it's going to be feel good, but it doesn't. And then there's this animosity. And animosity is, I'm calling it this, you don't like somebody. And someone says, I don't like them. Why not? I don't know. I just don't. I'm picking you out. You're an enemy. You've got, you know, like Mike, for instance. I have trouble with Mike, honestly. And it's about hair. And so jealousy often causes animosity. That's what last week's sermon was about. So this underlying animosity caused by whatever. Could be jealousy. Could be something else. You feel offended. You know, they said something. And I didn't like it. That Bob, he likes the Yankees, so I have to hate him. What? You know? So there's animosity, and these things are getting in the way of both forgiveness and reconciliation. So, but we're moving on from that, because here's where we want to go. The New Testament is full of verses and ideas and parables about forgiveness, about why we ought to forgive. You know, in Matthew, when we're doing the Lord's Prayer, it says, you got to forgive so you'll be forgiven. And lots of other stories, too. I love the picture of Jesus on the cross saying, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. They weren't even asking forgiveness, but our example is to forgive. If you're wronged, how do you handle being wronged? What you're supposed to do? Forgive. But this Colossians kind of sums it up. Bear with each other. And forgive whatever grievances you may have against one another, including bad driving. If someone drives bad, your duty is to forgive them before you say anything or do any signaling. Forgive them. Forgive them. Forgive them. Okay, she burned the toast. Actually, I burned the toast, but forgive me. Forgive, forgive. That's the duty. Forgive as the Lord has forgiven you. So go back to that scene on the cross. Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. That's how I need to forgive. I don't need to forgive. I'm not going to wait to forgive till they come ask for it. Now, one of the things that happened in the last year was in February of 2020, Danny preached a sermon about forgiveness, and I've listened to that probably, I'd say, at least 10 times. And every time it's good. So I'm going to give you a few points about it, but it's even better if you go listen to it. Number one, this is Danny's doing this kind of a book report from a book called Forgive to Live by Dick Tibbetts. And Danny, if I say something wrong, just let me slide on that. You can correct me later. But number one is that because you forgive somebody doesn't make what they did okay. And that's important to say. Just because I forgive you doesn't mean what you did was all right. Another thing. Number two, forgiveness doesn't necessarily remove consequences. There's still going to be a consequence for what you did even though you're forgiven. Now, sometimes also the consequences are forgiven, but sometimes not. One thing, sometimes when you offend someone, your trust is broken. And that takes a lot of work. Just because you forgive doesn't mean you automatically regain trust. Another thing, forgiveness is not making up. And this is where we get to this story of Joseph. It's not making up. It takes two to reconcile. Forgiveness is a step forward, though, towards reconciliation. It happens first. You forgive, and then possibly there's reconciliation. But it takes two to reconcile. Forgiveness doesn't necessarily forget. And this is where a big part of the book is, and Danny's sermon also, about you remember, and here's one of the issues, though, about forgiving. You have a grievance story. And what that means, you remember how you were offended and how that person said something bad to you or did something wrong. The problem is your grievance story, as you begin to think about it as time goes on and you begin to tell it to yourself and others, maybe even your imaginary others, you begin to tell it, it becomes inaccurate. And if this happens, your grievance story is not reality. It has distortions to it, you know? He hit me right in the face. Well, no, he didn't, you know. He just said he was going to hit you in the face. You know, your story grows. And it also assigns motives to people. They have done some action, and they think, well, that means they have this really bad heart towards me. He said, hey, Bob, you didn't comb your hair today. And now then, I believe he hates my guts, you know. He hates bald people, all of them. You know, I assign a motive to a person who's done something. And we have selective memories. We only remember parts of it. Actually, maybe I've done something to get in this fix, but I don't want to remember my part. We have a selective memory. And then we retell the story and confirm our position as the victim, as the good guy. You know, there's a good guy and bad guy in this story. This is my grievance story, how I've been offended. And so you've got to not be able to, you can't live your grievance story. You have to forgive. The other thing is, this has hit me right between the eyes. The offender, what does the offender need? Healing, not punishment. In some relationships, I'm the victim, and I need justice. But in some relationships, I'm the offender, and what I need is forgiveness. Forgiveness is important. It's crucial for us to live in freedom and joy, but there's a higher level, and we're going to talk about that right now. And here's the thing about What we're moving to next is reconciliation. Here's where it first starts. You've offended somebody, and Jesus says, instead of offering your gift at the altar, leave your gift at the altar because reconciling with this brother. Now, this brother's going to have to forgive you first because you've offended this brother. But you're seeking what your desire is, reconciliation. This is Joseph. Joseph wants the family back together. That's what he wants. And so this is this verse. But then there's more and more to it. There's several other verses, but one I want to read is Romans. It doesn't use the word reconciliation, but it says this: live in harmony with each other, if it is possible. This is in Romans 12. As far as it depends with you. I mean, sometimes it's not dependent on me. And y'all have heard me tell this story, so I'm not going to tell it again, but I offended my sister when we were young. Had to do with the death of one of her pets. And I was at wrong. Well, I wanted forgiveness, you know. I was wrong. I needed forgiveness. But I also wanted, we need to be brother and sister again. I don't want to live the rest of my life, you hate my guts, because of something I did. I need forgiveness. As far as it depends on me, I was going to live in peace with her. But she might not want to. So I can't reconcile unless she's willing to reconcile. Everybody with me on this? You understanding that? That's, I think, pretty easy. In 2 Corinthians 5, man, Paul just goes on and on and on about God has given us not just the instruction to forgive, but he's given us the ministry of reconciliation. And at one point it says that we ought to be like Christ, not counting people's sins against them. That's how we should live our life, not counting people's sins against them. But, like I said, it takes two to reconcile. And this is from, it takes two people to be reunited. Lewis B. Smeads wrote a book back in the 80s, said, Forgive and Forget. Now, in this book, Forgive and Forget, he actually told you why you really don't completely forget, but you do, kind of like Tibbetts talked about, you live a different story. It's how you remember that's important. But it takes one person. I can forgive you, but we can't reconcile unless we're both in the game. And so this is important, as this is going to play out in the life of Joseph. Now then, this is something I wrote several years ago, and I had some help with this. I wrote it. I rewrote it. Some other persons wrote it. But this is me talking as if I'm talking to a person that has offended me. There's a grievance between us. There's a grievance between us, and I have been wronged. So this is my statement. I'm going to break this down a little bit as we go. I forgive you for what you've done. I don't excuse you. Y'all get that right. I'm not excusing what you did, forgiving you. There's a difference. It was not okay. And we can't be together if you keep doing it or if you don't try to stop, to help. Try to get help and stop. You've got to change. This is called, in biblical terms, it's called repent. You've got to change. You can't keep hurting me like this. We can't live together, can't be together if you're going to keep doing the bad activity. Joseph was not going to go back with his brothers if they were still the evil men so he tested them several times. Are you guys still the evil men who would kill your own brother? So if that's you, we can't be together. I can forgive you. We can't be together. And we will both suffer consequences. Some of those consequences will suffer together. But I will not hold a grudge. Even if we can't be together, I'm not going to hold a grudge. And I'm not going to hold on to negative feelings about you. And this is very difficult, to let go of feelings. How do I do that? I do it by telling myself a story that, by the way, this person is a child of God. They're a child of God. And by the way, I have been forgiven also. So that helps me let go of my negative feelings. Not easy, though. I say to this person, I'm not better than you, and I ask for forgiveness for the things I've done to hurt you. One thing, we always need to be in the asking for forgiveness mode if we've offended someone. And I will search for ways for my love for you to grow.
I want to move on to this idea, though. John Piper, famous preacher, teacher, author, tells a story, and you can look this up and just look up what good is forgiveness, and you'll see his version of it. I'm going to tell his story. And he asked the question, what good is forgiveness? He says, forgiveness, what good is it? I mean, really, why? What do you have once you've been forgiven? What do you got? And he says, is it just so I'll have a clean conscience? Is that what I'm looking for? Or is there more? That's really what he's headed for. Not what good is it, but is there more? And so he said, for instance, I wake up in the morning. This is John Piper's story, not Bob's. I've got my own version of this, and so do you, by the way. I wake up in the morning, and I'm walking from the bed to the kitchen, and I stumble over some stuff that my wife has left in the floor. Now, this is John Piper. It's not Mary Beth, okay? So my wife has left this in the floor, and she doesn't usually do that, so I turn to her and say, what have you done? Why'd you leave that in the floor? You know, I nearly fell. Harsh, okay? And then the wife looks at him like, and that's it, man. I mean, all of a sudden, whatever good was going to go on that day, it's done. Maybe you've been in a situation like that. Harsh words for something simple, and now then, it's on. Like Donkey Kong, you know, we're going to fight. We're going to be grumpy. I don't know, Jeanette, if you've ever been grumpy at Mike. I don't think so, but he probably has been grumpy to you. So you're imagining this scene where there's tension. And so we go into the kitchen, and I'm going into the kitchen, and there's my wife, and I've just been rude to her, and she's given me the coldest shoulder. Like, you know, hey, babe, where's the coffee? Crickets, nothing. I mean, and there's this, you know, you're feeling it. Y'all have felt that, right? With some person who you love or who's been your friend or who's your spouse, who's your child, all of a sudden we're not speaking to each other because you were rude. Now then John says, what I need to do is I need to ask for forgiveness. Why? Because I want my relationship back. I just don't want to have a clean conscience. I want my relationship back. I want a hug. I want a smile. And I need to ask for forgiveness because I want reconciliation. You with me? My goal is reconciliation. My goal is Joseph wants his family back. And so he's willing to go to this extreme measures because he wants to have his family again. And so reconciliation requires a change of behavior called repentance. It's a change of behavior on the person who's offender. Need to stop being snarky to my wife in the morning for no reason. Okay? Got to stop that. But forgiveness, okay, let's reconcile. So Joseph, what'd he do? What'd Joe do? Joe's great. I like to call him Joe, by the way. Joseph, not only did he forgive his brothers, give them the kiss, hug them, fed them, he also arranged with Pharaoh that Pharaoh would give him the best land. Now, first of all, Pharaoh just offers it, but then Joseph kind of coaches the brothers how to act in front of Pharaoh so they're certain to get this good land because he wants to take care of them. This is what he wants to do. He wants to take care of his brothers. So Genesis being the Torah. Torah means you're going to learn a lesson. We're going to learn a lesson from a story. And the story, the lesson of the story is, number one, forgive. But then number two is work for reconciliation. As far as it depends on you, Romans says, or the whole story of Joseph says, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with each other, even if you've been offended. That's your goal. Now, here's the issue. Here's what happened. What do I do? Well, let's move on to the slide. With others, what am I going to do? Well, I'm going to forgive, and then I'm going to work. I'm going to work. What is the work? Well, it might be counseling. For sure, it's going to involve a conversation. Something about our relationship needs to change. There's brokenness. We might need some help. Forgiveness, but then let go of grudges. Let go of grudges. Let go of offenses and say, I forgive you. Now with God, this is where I want to get to this. Well, first of all, at the very end, here's how the story ends. And we'll hit some more on this bigger point next week. The story ends, Jacob dies. All the boys, not these two Jacobs. Jacob dies, and the boys take him back to their homeland to bury him. On the way back, the brothers, they're worried. They don't trust. Joseph has given them grace after grace, but they don't trust him. I'm wondering if sometimes maybe we're like that with God. Like, God's forgiven us. God's forgiven us. So what do? Well, we receive that forgiveness and then repent or try and change that behavior so we can be reconciled with God. God wants the family back also. He doesn't want just to forgive us. He wants to forgive and then us be family again. Receive that grace. And I know I've been a man, sometimes still, but for months, years in my life, it's been so difficult to receive God's forgiveness. And often I would look at myself in the mirror in the morning, and the first thing I would think, you are some scumbag. And I would begin to rehearse not the offenses others have done to me, but the offenses I've done to God and others. And I would begin to define myself that this is who I am. Because I was not ready, like the brothers, they're not ready to receive the forgiveness. And Joseph said, guys, come on. God used what you did for great reasons. It wasn't, he uses this phrase, am I supposed to put myself in God's place? No. I forgive you. Let's live the rest of our lives as a family. Because our God is, so I want to ask these final questions. Our God's mighty to save. We're going to sing that song. But what I'm hoping for in this, and I've written these comments down. They didn't make it into the typed version, so you know. My desire to love God and be loved by God, could it be that my desire to love God and be loved by God, can that overcome my desire for revenge? Man, if you got a thought of revenge, you're telling a bad story in your own head, let your desire to be loved by God overcome that. Let calmness and peace could overcome anger. Man, I have some friends in Abilene, they are so easily angered, especially if you start talking about politics, they're so easily angered. Instead, let God's calmness. Could wanting good for my enemy replace holding a grudge? I want good for my enemy, even. Could it be possible for loving God to be my priority in life? Could loving God bring me more peace and joy than revenge? And so ultimately, does God really save? Can God really restore a broken relationship? Can God restore a broken relationship? I want you to ask for any broken relationship in your life right now. Can God restore that? Not just say, I forgive you, but actually bring the two parties together. Could it happen? Can He move mountains? Does God really forgive? Can we have fresh relationship with God? Guys, I want you to think one more thing. Isn't this the point, one of the many points as we're learning of the prodigal son story? Jesus wanted those two brothers to live in the same house with their dad. Both brothers. Reconciliation. That's what we want. And our God, who can move mountains, can heal relationships. Let's sing.